Hello, everyone. I'm John Melke, and this is Parkside Today. I'm joined by Dave Giordano, Executive Director of the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, also known as Root Pike Wind. Dave, welcome to Parkside Today.
It's great to be here.
So we've got a lot of things to cover today, but let's start with Foxconn and the efforts Root Pike Wind is involved with surrounding the Foxconn development. According to a recent Journal Times story, Root Pike Wind, the village of Mount Pleasant and Racine County are getting close to a memorandum of understanding regarding the Pike River watershed around Area 3 of the Foxconn development. How did all that come about, and what's Root Pike Wind going to be involved with regard to the watershed initiative around Foxconn?
Yeah, this is definitely something pretty exciting for us, because we've worked on this behind the scenes for a long time, starting back in October of 2017. So we work pretty often quietly behind the scenes. And one of the things that we realized pretty quickly was the Foxconn development is in the Pike River watershed, or part of it is. And the development, Area 1 and Area 3, sit on a sub-watershed called the Lamprick Ditch. That area, the Lamprick Ditch and its surrounding sub-watershed, is one of the most impaired sub-watersheds of the Pike River. Wow. Now, that's before Foxconn even got there, before Foxconn, that name, ever came up.
Yeah.
So we go back to our Pike River plan of 2013, where all of this land was analyzed, essentially, where we're looking at what's the source of our pollutant loading to the Pike River. The Pike River is what they call EPA impaired, 303D impaired, because of these runoff pollutants.
Okay.
Well, no offense to our agricultural community out there, but farming and some of the resulting runoff issues is the biggest pollutant load factor in our watershed.
Oh, okay.
That was kind of a surprise to me when I took on the role as executive director. I just didn't know that much about the watershed or these pollutant loads. But farming is still kind of behind the times in terms of getting up to speed with best practices. Okay. Now, more and more farmers are doing things to help out. But what's interesting about the Foxconn development is that it's being built on a huge track of agricultural land.
Okay.
So that agricultural land not only has issues on the surface, runoff issues, phosphorus, nitrogen, E. coli, but it also, it's all that farm field out there actually has drain tiles underneath. So what happens when it rains is that, you know, most people think all that water absorbs into the ground.
Yeah.
Not out in that area. It's so wet, you know, pre-settlement, that area was all predominantly wetland. When farmers began to farm it, they realized, well, it's just wet too often. So it's laced with drain tile.
To get the water out.
Get it out.
It doesn't just stand there.
Yep. Right. Yep. As quickly as possible, because it still is going to retain some water, but most of it gets pumped off rapidly.
Okay.
Well, the problem with that is it gets pumped off rapidly into the Lamprick Ditch. So it sees this huge rush of water whenever it rains, and then it goes back down to barely nothing. So they call it flashiness. Okay. The highs are very highs, but it's predominantly low.
That's
not good conditions for habitat. It's not good conditions for stream banks, which tend to take that volume and velocity, and that's what creates a lot of the erosion. So when you get that erosion, you get a lot of sediment. Some erosion is natural. The rivers evolve and they move and they wiggle like snakes. But when you get excessive loads, then you get massive erosion. Erosion has got a lot of, there's a lot of issues with that. The main one is that sediment, also phosphorus, attaches itself to sediment. So not only are you eroding the stream banks and you're bringing more sediment in, but the phosphorus that comes along with it. So when you get too much phosphorus, then you get algae blooms, because you're essentially putting more excessive amounts of food in the water. Then the algae grows. It's it soaks up all the oxygen, and that also, you know, we don't have fish that can't live without oxygen.
Sure, right.
And other aquatic species.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's why the Lamprick Ditch is so degraded. Now, again, that's all before Foxconn became a household name.
Yeah.
So that development, when they're out there pouring slabs and, you know, ripping up all that farmland, they've also ripped up all that drain tile.
Oh, wow.
So we no longer have the drain tile issue, or will have it as that development progresses in Area 3 in some of the worst areas.
Is that, like, not maybe a totally bad thing that the drain tile isn't there, or is it a good and bad?
Yeah, it's kind of ironic, actually, isn't it, where you would think, well, development, you know, people, I think, generally think, and I'm one of those people, that are like, well, development's bad for the environment. Yeah. Well, in this case, it's taking out a lot of farmland, which isn't really regulated a whole lot when it comes to surface runoff,
mm-hmm.
plus it's ripping up all the drain tile.
Wow.
Okay, so there's a huge upside there.
Mm-hmm.
The downside is that, because it's not all upside,
yeah.
the downside is now you're going to have a lot more impervious pavement. Okay.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
So the water isn't going to infiltrate as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Foxconn's under regulation to build these stormwater ponds, which they have.
Mm-hmm.
If you go out there and you drive around the site, you'll see huge stormwater ponds out there.
So, know enough about this to be dangerous, but at the state level, if you're doing something that's taking wetland away, you have to replace that, what is it, 1.5 times what
right.
you're taking out? Is that semi-correct?
Right. With Foxconn, actually, they put a tighter requirement on them where it was a 1 to 2. So every acre that you took out, you had to replace somewhere else.
With two. Yeah.
So, actually, a lot of that, they call that mitigation. So there where a lot of that mitigation money went will be along Meacham Road east of Sanders Park. There's a big farm field there that will be a mitigation bank. Well, a lot of that bank will be funded by the Foxconn.
Wow.
Mitigation efforts. Mm-hmm. So we've got impervious pavement, which is going to flow into these ponds. The ponds can capture a certain amount, but will ultimately overflow into the Lamprick Ditch on a heavier rain event.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the regulation. That wasn't happening before Foxconn got there. We didn't have to capture that water.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Okay. But now, since it's a development, they do.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a good side to that. Now, the downside to these ponds is they attract a lot of geese.
Yeah.
Geese create a lot of waste.
Yeah.
And they can create up to a pound of phosphorus a year in waste.
Wow.
Not to mention E. coli and nitrogen as well. Mm-hmm. So now we've got these big ponds that generally are catching a lot of that water. Okay. But now when you get a heavier event and it's got to have an overflow, you know, just like your sinks have an overflow,
mm-hmm.
the pond's got to overflow. Well, whatever's in the pond is now going to end up in the Lamprick Ditch.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're trying to work with them on some best management practices of those ponds so that when they do overflow, which they're designed to do, which mm-hmm. isn't totally within regulation,
mm-hmm.
That they perform better.
Yeah.
We're also really worried about the amount of road salt that's going to be used in that area,
mm-hmm.
not just with the expansion of those roads like KR and Braun and others,
mm-hmm.
but also the amount of pavement that Foxconn's going to have that, salt right now is really the best effective solution for, you know, treating these roads.
Mm-hmm.
We've also proposed to them some ideas on some better ways to use salt or more efficient ways to use salt.
Okay.
And we don't really have any saltwater fish in Wisconsin, so this is why we don't want salt in our rivers. They pretty much, you know, they're going to kill off a lot of what's in there.
Yeah.
That's one of the main reasons why we really don't have northern pike in the Pike River, which is also kind of ironic.
Mm-hmm.
This project along the Lamprick Ditch would restore some of that habitat, and if we can manage that salt load and some of the other pollutants, we think we can make that tributary better than it ever was before
Wow.
settlement.
Wow. So when, how did, has
or
this
after
been
after settlement, I should say.
Has this been on the Root Pike Wind radar for a while? Like, because you mentioned it didn't just come up because of the Foxconn development, or was it the Foxconn development that kind of maybe brought it up on the screen a little bit and starts the initiative?
Yeah, absolutely. It did. You know, we service 5 different watersheds. We try to get projects going in all 5 of those watersheds, but, you know, we're a small organization. It's hard for us to tackle everything.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's as easy to take on the big projects as the small ones. So when this came up, we looked at this, and again, we had a lot of recommendations in our Pike River plan that fit really well with the way that project was conceptually being kind of put in place, some mm-hmm. of that master planning for those parcels. So we looked at it like a win-win. I mean, that's going to be a great backyard for a lot of different people
mm-hmm.
and a lot of different entities, and to be able to have the public have access to that corridor and be able to enjoy it and improve water quality, reduce flooding, all those other things. It was pretty quickly looked at as being something very positive mm-hmm. by all the stakeholders.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much behind the scenes that either I can't talk about or it's just so complex. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make for great radio, but it's, there's been a spirit overall for win-win, not
good.
Only from the Muni, but, you know, Foxconn has interest in this as well, and we'll have to see how things play out as, you know, their focus turns to Area 3 and,
sure.
and some of the other areas around there.
Yeah, interesting.
The one other thing I should also mention about SALT, and I just got back from a meeting today with another municipality where we try to show municipalities the most efficient use of SALT that you can possibly have and still mm-hmm. achieve safety requirements, right? We all want to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we start, right? But until there's a better solution than SALT for our roads and our pavement, we have to find a way to use it super effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So this particular municipality went to one of our events where they got to learn about brining, which you're pre-treating the roads before the snow hits.
Right.
And then when it hits, it's just melting.
Yeah.
So you're getting better coverage. You're spraying a salt solution, a very specific salt solution on the road that uses a far less amount of salt, but it mm-hmm. covers the pavement perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And
stays on the pavement instead of getting...
Right.
That
bounced off or whatever.
Off. Yeah.
Plowed off.
Yeah.
The last snowstorm this municipality had, this was about a week ago when we had that last mm-hmm. one, I think. And they saved, get ready for this, 300 tons of salt.
Oh my gosh.
By brining.
Oh my gosh.
And they got zero phone calls on bad conditions.
Oh
or,
my goodness.
Now salt alone is great, right? So there's environmental side to that,
yeah.
which we love.
Yeah.
Less 300 tons less salt in our watershed.
Wow.
One event, one municipality.
Wow.
$20,000 they saved. So now we're talking about economics, right?
Yeah.
Now these municipalities can save money. They can get return on investment because it does cost
sure.
to buy the equipment.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So for us, we love to look at the ROI and what was the return on our vent that we invited all these municipalities. They got to learn about better use of equipment. Some are already using this
yeah.
equipment, but some weren't.
Yeah.
They tried it out, and this is what success looks like.
Yeah. Well, I know here at UW Parkside, you see it on the roadways that they go out and do the brining
right.
On the roads. And I talked to John Brook, our facilities director, recently about that. And he said, you know, you do have to look at, when is something forecast to happen? How long a time period is this going to be effective on the roads? But you think, I mean, just as somebody driving out here, when I see that, oh, there's the stripes of brine, I think, well, when it starts to snow or something else, you know, ice or sleet or something, at least the stuff that's supposed to do its job is already there.
Right.
So rather than, oh, it's going to do that, and now we're going to be reacting to the weather, we're almost being a little bit more proactive too.
Right. I think the forecasting has got better. You know, it's never perfect, but it's gotten better where you can look at, okay, well, front's going to come through and the temp's going to go up, so you need to put as much salt on. You know, there's all different kinds of salt mixes, too, that work at different temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, John gets it, though. I mean, he understands the power of brining, not just the environmental side, but the economics.
Yeah.
But there are times when, you know, safety is always paramount.
Yeah.
And we get that as an organization, too. We don't say don't ever use salt. We say, hey, use it smartly, disperse it the
right.
way you should, and
right.
and where you can move to brining.
Yeah. But just that, like you say, there's one municipality, and even if during the course of a winter it was three or four times that you didn't have to do that and you could still maintain the safety, and
right.
you're looking at, what'd you say, it was 300 ton?
300 tons.
300 tons that they saved. You know,
right.
multiply that by four, and it's, I can't even do that math.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's a lot.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just happened today. It
wow.
was actually right before I got here. I learned of that, and we were super happy about that because that's a beautiful story that we can tell to all of our municipalities.
Yeah. Hey, we're talking with Dave Giordano, who's executive director of the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, also known as Root Pike WIN. And we talked a little bit about your organization's work in the Foxconn development area. Last summer, Root Pike WIN and UW Parkside signed an agreement to help create more habitat for a pollinator, specifically the rusty-patched bumblebee. Tell us a little bit about how Root Pike WIN became familiar with the rusty-patched bumblebee. I never thought that I would be paying as close of attention to bumblebees as I have since last summer, where now it's like, oh, I wonder if I'm seeing one, you know, so it's pretty interesting that I'm paying more attention to it. But how did Root Pike WIN get involved with that?
Yeah. And much like you, I mean, I wasn't a bumblebee aficionado, you know, before I took this role here at Root Pike WIN.
Yeah.
I mean, It takes funding to get these projects done. You know, it's great to have plans and it's great to have designs and it's great to have these aspirations and goals. Ultimately, it takes funding to get projects done.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to look at where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we did a lot of research into the site here and we stumbled across the fact that, you know, this area, the hub of the Pike River watershed, is really the Parkside campus.
Yeah.
It's also the hub for the rusty patch bumblebee because, when they find the rusty patch, they document it. Okay. Well, this area has had some of the last documented instances of the rusty patch.
Okay.
So, That's the good news.
Mm-hmm.
The bad news is that the rusty patch population is rapidly declining. They're finding less and less.
Mm.
So we all know pollinators are super important, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they're gone, our food supply is gone, and then we're gone.
Mm-hmm.
So the rusty patch is what they call an indicator species in that, it, you know, when they start to see that one in decline,
yeah.
they worry about what's next,
right,
and then what's
right.
after that and what's after that. So we have to bring these habitats back. And they're unique in that they, you know, I'm not an expert on bumblebees, but they need a variety of habitat all throughout the year. They need places where they can burrow and nest. They don't live in a hive. They I think they live solitary or just in small groups.
Hmm.
They live underground.
Mm-hmm.
So they find crayfish burrows and mouse burrows and any little, you know,
yeah.
places underground that they
yeah.
can get into. That's where they that's where they overwinter.
Mm-hmm.
And then starting in spring, they need food right away. So food is flowers, right?
Yeah.
So they need flowers from, you know, early March into October.
Yeah.
So when you get the asters at the end of the year. So they need that constant food source and they need a place to hide and habitate.
Mm-hmm.
So where that intersects with Parkside and the cross country course and some of the other natural areas around here is that while, you know, the average Joe like myself, you look around, you're like, wow, it's beautiful out here.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, it's green and you got trees and bushes and flowers and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is, you know, we have a lot of invasive species taking over, not just some of the areas on campus, but all over the watershed. Mm-hmm. It's all over the United States. And the bees are picky. You know, they want what they want. They're used to it, and they don't mm-hmm. find it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden, you know, we're seeing these declines. So you see the habitat declining. You see the food source declining.
Sure.
The right kind of food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of sad. So
yeah.
We said, well, let's see if we can get a partnership going with Parkside. I mean, the genesis of the campus being a living, learning laboratory.
Right.
It's in the epicenter, and there's funding available for federally endangered species. So all of that's coming together, and, you know, we're already seeing the results of that as funding has started to come in.
And we've, you know, that's the beautiful part about you mentioned the cross-country course, is that, you know, it's a gorgeous area. There's a lot of land out there, and there's land that, whether it be wildlife or bumblebees, that they can live in and not be disturbed, even with runners going around on the track or whatever. There's still plenty of land for them.
Right, right. There's so many. We talk about the stormwater sandwich, and that when you do these restoration projects, when you do these environmental impact projects, it's not like you got one slice on the sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
You've got multiple slices of benefits. You've got habitat that we've talked about. You've got improved water quality. These native plants absorb a lot of pollutants. They soak up a lot of water, mm-hmm. prevent erosion. You've got the wellness factor where people want to be in these spaces. We've got less and less of them.
Yeah.
So they become unique. So they become more valuable. People want to live near those valuable spaces. They want to be in those valuable spaces. And if they can recreate in them as well,
right?
Whether they're bird watching or they're snowshoeing or they're skiing or running or just walking.
Yeah.
It offers a multitude of different benefits, and they're not mutually exclusive, which is great. So just because you've got maybe a stormwater feature, some infrastructure that you've put into the course
mm-hmm.
through the use of native plants and native solutions, doesn't mean that, you know, it can't interact from a like a flood reduction standpoint mm-hmm. or a water quality standpoint. They all work together typically. Right. And so just, you know, for the rusty patch, yeah, we're targeting different, some of the species that they really love and the habitat types. But those species are species that other native species love too. So again, we're helping out the overall connectivity and diversity of the population of our native species here.
Wow.
And it's, you know, native plants also affect water quality. Well, if we're holding more stream bank in because mm-hmm. we've got more native plants that are populated along those stream banks.
Yeah.
Well, that helps the aquatic species population as well.
Because the plants are acting like, again, here's where I get enough to be dangerous. But the plants on the stream beds or banks, it's like a filtration system, mm-hmm. right? And that's why having those plants on the banks is important.
Right, right. So the challenge that we have really throughout the watershed is you have, let's take buckthorn, for example. That's an invasive bush that really kind of takes over.
Mm.
It uses chemical warfare. Its root systems kind of, they inhibit the growth of a lot of other native species. But the root systems don't run that deep. So you don't get the same kind of erosion control
mm-hmm.
in the, certainly the diversity of plant species, because you have one species taking over or mm-hmm. only a couple okay. species taking over.
Yep.
So that's why we target that one. It's the most invasive, at least in my opinion, on campus.
Yeah.
And then you replace it with 35 species where you only had one or two.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden you've created this diversity, you know, this, you know, it's like the golden corral for the bumblebee yeah. where it's got yeah. everything it needs right there.
Wow. Wow. We're talking with Dave Giordano, who's executive director of Root Pike Wynn. Another way in which Ruth Pike Wynn is getting involved on the UW-Parkside campus is that sometime, and I'm not sure of the exact timing, but your organization is going to be, we'll call it reutilizing the chancellor's previous residence, for those who are familiar with where the chancellor used to live along County E. That's a part of the state property and part of the Parkside campus. But what's Ruth Pike Wynn planning to do with that property and that building as well?
We're super excited about it. We've got a lot of ideas. But before I go into the chancellor's house, I want to make sure that I give props to a lot of the faculty at Parkside that's helped really form this whole pollinator patch idea and help with the cross country course. Professor Rogers, Professor Orlovsky, Professor Wolf, Professor Heedley. I'm probably forgetting some, so I apologize. But they've really helped us out. I'm not a scientist. I'm not an ecologist. A lot of what I know comes from them, and we really appreciate what they've contributed to this effort.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great learning environment out there for them and for Parkside students.
Yeah, it is, and I know they're excited about it, and we're looking forward to those integrations.
Mm-hmm.
The Chancellor's House, yes, we're very excited about it. We're actually moving in this weekend,
the
25th.
Uh-huh.
And, we had some challenges with our old office, and we didn't have enough space, and we have a lot of equipment, and it was up different flights of stairs, so it was very challenging. This is great because, one, it's on the cross-country course, which is just such a fantastic site. I mean, it is just great, and whether you run or not, to experience it is awesome. But it's also an opportunity to bring people to that area that may not be familiar with it. And, we're excited about having meetings in there. We've already got some scheduled. But there is some space also to do. One of the things that we're considering is to have a endangered plant lab in the basement. It's a farmhouse.
Mm-hmm.
We're already targeting a species called the purple milkweed, which is really hard to propagate.
Okay.
It's on the state's federally endangered species list.
Mm.
So our idea is to propagate those that milkweed, within the basement, and then have planting days where students, faculty, staff, whoever, we pick the right conditions, the right day, these plants are ready to go, and now this is not only a place for endangered insects, but now it's a mecca for endangered plant species. Well, I wasn't aware of this till literally just last week. There's hundreds of threatened and endangered plant species in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, through the power of positivity, I think we really are able to make some change in that regard.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's going to happen right here on the Parkside campus.
Yeah.
So we're really excited about having a destination that allows us to do some of these kind of incubator projects and programs.
Mm-hmm. Without putting you on the spot, do you ever see a time in the future where, in addition to what you might be doing with that residence, with that building, where it's somebody from the public comes to see what you're doing or learn more about whether it's the rusty patch bumblebee or the purple milkweed, or using that as more of a community connection as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's the perfect spot. It's got, it's got the amenities that we needed to be able to have those kinds of events.
Mm-hmm.
It just affords us the ability to create more interaction with the community and show them what success looks like. One of the other ideas that we had, or we still have, and I'm pretty passionate about it because I actually come from the construction industry,
mm-hmm.
Is to use the house as kind of a model for innovation for a sustainable house. Some of the audience might be familiar with LEED certification.
Mm-hmm.
It is sort of the gold standard for sustainable buildings,
mm-hmm.
and they have a LEED standard or a LEED accreditation for or designation for buildings that have been restored to be more sustainable.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
It's pretty high criteria.
Mm-hmm.
But our thought is to bring in vendors and industries that manufacture these new sustainable solutions, so that when we bring people to the house, they're not just seeing desks and different things. Yeah. You know, yeah. It's not just an office.
Right.
This is a
right.
place to learn about sustainability from the building on out and all the way into the watershed.
Yeah.
You know, one example for in particular is there's a organization called or a company called Stormwater Solutions. They build a it's called a I'm gonna mess it up, but it is the Storm Garden, I think they call it.
Okay.
And essentially it's kind of like a rain garden on a table that goes up to your gutter.
Yeah.
And so when the runoff that comes off the roof goes into this box. Oh. It's patented, it's fantastic. And it can hold 300 gallons of water on the bottom, but on the top is a garden.
Yeah.
Okay, and so the plants are soaking up some of that water, and then there's a relief valve in case there's too much, and then it flows off. But, you know, you're getting your first 300 gallons absorbed
in this
box.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one of the innovations that we're looking at. As we become more of an urban watershed,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not, you know, acres are going to go away. We're going to be looking at feet and square inches to manage, you know, the wild fluctuations in stormwater runoff.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, Dave, the time whenever the discussion is a lot of fun, the time goes by fast and the time has gone by extremely quickly today. We've been joined by Dave Giordano, who's executive director for Root Pike Wind. We've talked about some of the organization's efforts around the Foxconn development, very interesting there, and what's going on with the rusty-patched bumblebee here at UW Parkside and efforts on the cross-country course. So it's been a great discussion. We could dive into Lake Michigan water levels and how that impacts the watershed, but we'll save that for another day and hopefully you'd be willing to come back and we can talk more about the Root Pike watershed here in southeastern Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'd love to come back, and I just want to thank, you know, the staff, students that work for us, and the faculty administration. You've all been very supportive of our organization, and you know, for that we're grateful.
Great. We've been joined by Dave Giordano, executive director of Root Pike Wind. Dave, thanks a lot. And to hear past editions of UW Parkside, please visit uwp.edu/parkside today. Thanks for listening.